In the last two decades, no political theory has sparked as much controversy as the idea that we're embroiled in a clash of civilizations. Back in 1993, Samuel Huntington first made this argument, saying a new kind of global conflict had replaced the Cold War, that China and the Islamic world were poised to challenge the core Western values of liberal democracy and pluralism. Many people dismissed Huntington's argument as another bit of Western arrogance, as if other cultures simply aren't capable of creating democracies. And then the Twin Towers at the World Trade Center came crashing down, and Huntington's idea gained new urgency. So are we seeing a clash of civilizations? Steve Paulson asked three prominent intellectuals what they think, and whether large catchphrases like East and West still have meaning.
Hello, my name is Sasha Abramsky. I'm a senior fellow for democracy at the New York-based Demos think tank. Is there a clash of civilizations? My answer to that question is partly yes, partly no. Not in the way that Samuel Huntington believes there is. Not in the sense of a geographic clash of civilizations and cultures. But is there a clash of ideas going on throughout the world, inside countries as well as between countries? Absolutely. Can we control the direction that that clash takes? That's the question that's going to define probably the rest of our lives.
Now, do you see this clash of ideas mainly between Islam and the West, or is it bigger than that?
I think it's far bigger than that. Throughout the world at this point, the Enlightenment has taken root in many cultures. The ideas of science, of rationality, of understanding politics as a rational experience. Many countries now have at least an intellectual elite that believes that. On the other hand, most countries also have people and groups that are very, very scared by those forces. What I think is happening, and I think it's increasingly happened over the last 5, 10, 15 years, there are people within individual countries who view their experiences through an extremist religious lens. It doesn't have to be Islam. It could be Christianity in the Bible Belt in America. It could be Judaism in parts of Israel. It could be Hindu fundamentalism in India. But increasingly, religion is coming to play an organizing role that in decades past has been played by secular organizations and secular political groupings. And I think that's the central clash. It's not necessarily between geographic locations. It's between intellectual mindsets.
So the pre-Enlightenment world is essentially this religious worldview. I mean, even though it plays out differently, depending on which religion you're talking about, you're saying that's the real clash here.
It seems to me that that's the exact clash that we're looking at, that one of the great projects of Enlightenment thinking was the ability to separate out church and state, whether that was formally, as in the United States Constitution, or whether it was culturally, let's say a country like England, which has an established church, the Church of England, but to all practical purposes has a secular apparatus of government. And I think what we're seeing increasingly is the breakdown of that divide. And the reason I think it's too simplistic to say this is a clash of civilizations between Islam and the West, that divide is breaking down as powerfully in a state like Alabama as it is in, let's say, Iran or Afghanistan. The worldview is actually more similar than we might be comfortable acknowledging, that somebody who preaches that the Bible says the be-all and end-all of how the world was created, that the world was created in 7 days, that evolution is this satanic diversion. Someone who preaches that is actually preaching a religion as extreme as the Taliban's. And if you look at the history books, if you look at what happens in moments of extremism like that, whether it's the Crusades, whether it's World War II, where it wasn't religion but it was nationalism run amok, you see that the aftermath is cataclysmic. It always results in tremendous bloodshed. It always results in the collapse of established old cultures and civilizations. It always results in economic disintegration.
Hmm. Well, it's fascinating to hear what you're saying. I mean, partly you're redefining the whole notion of clash of civilizations as something between East and West. I mean, you're saying those categories really don't work anymore. And maybe we should pick that apart a little bit and talk about the West, because, I mean, that still is a very enduring concept. When we talk about the West, we tend to refer to values like liberal democracy as it's played out in Europe and the United States. Is that even worth saying anymore?
The problem is nobody really does a very good job of defining what the West is. And it's possibly because it's an impossibility at this point in time to accurately define the West as an institution or as a single cultural concept. Unlike, let's say, NATO, where you can pinpoint the member states with accuracy because it's a club. Well, who's in the West at this point?
Right. I mean, is Japan a part of the West? I mean, Japan
being an
advanced capitalist nation with an enduring democracy, obviously, geographically, it's not remotely in the West.
You're right. Japan today is an advanced economy. It's an advanced democracy. The other example is Russia. Now, if you go back to Peter the Great's time, Russia defines itself as this rising power designed to transcend East and West. But if you go back a bit further, Russia's a Mongol state, and it's firmly set in the East. If you fast forward to the Soviet times, again, Russia comes to be seen as an Eastern state in opposition to Western values or Western economies. Today, well, it largely depends on who you're talking to. If you're talking to a Russian nationalist hostile at the encroachment of NATO, well, Russia's obviously standing in opposition to the West. If you're talking to an Islamic militant in Chechnya, Russia's a part of the satanic West. So it seems to me that geographic definitions of the West, if they ever did make sense, they've really lost their meaning. But going back to your first question, when we're talking about the West, do we really mean democracy, pluralism, liberalism, and so on? Well, if you define the West by Enlightenment values, that's what we mean. On the other hand, if you go back to the Inquisition, 500 years, well, the Inquisition is firmly set in the West. In many ways, at that period in history, it defines the West. And the Inquisition is one of the most bloody, intolerant, vicious episodes in European history.
Well, let me ask the question another way then, in terms of trying to come up with a definition of the West. Do we mean something differently now than we did 50 years ago or 100 years ago? Has the definition of the West changed?
Absolutely. If you go back 100 years ago, the West was the locus of naked imperial power, not the sort of now you see it, now you don't imperialism of American foreign policy today, where we have a de facto empire, but we deny it. If you go back 100 years, all the proud great nation states of Western Europe had empires. There was nothing hidden about it. They were the glories of national culture, the English Raj in India, the French possessions in North Africa, the Dutch East Indies, and so on. These were the stuff of national legend. If 100 years ago you were talking about what the West is, you were talking about a proud, expansionist, martial culture. You were also, incidentally, talking about a society which didn't really value universal suffrage. So you only have to go back 100 years. No country in the world allowed women to vote. You go back a little bit further. Most countries didn't have any kind of suffrage. They were essentially aristocracies or monarchies. Ironically, many of the views that would have been championed by leading statesmen 100 years ago in the West are views that today are seen as so quote-unquote retrograde that only an obscurantist from outside the West would dare to espouse them, case in point being women's suffrage. Today, nobody in Western politics is going to advocate denying the right to vote to women. But if you go to Saudi Arabia, women cannot vote. Most of the media in the West would define that as very, very backward. But that was a value that not too long ago would have been a Western value, not allowing women to vote. So if we really want to get a grip on what we're fighting about, what our tensions are about, what the clashes that are emerging are about, we really should move beyond these simplistic definitions of East and West.
Sasha, thank you.
Very welcome.
Sasha Abramsky is a senior fellow for democracy at Demos and author of the book American Furies.